Synthaholics.
Welcome to Synthaholics, our Dune edition podcast of the book Dune. Today we have myself, Aaron O'Brien, and Holly Michelle. Hello, Holly.
Hello, Aaron.
So we are now on to the next two chapters of Dune, and how are you enjoying the cast of characters we just keep on getting introduced to?
You know, I've read this portion of the book before, and it's funny, once you've already read it, to go back and reread it, you notice other things.
There are little, like, subtle things that are thrown in there that you don't pick up the first time you read it.
Right. I think the first time you read it, you're just like, okay, tell me what happens next.
Right.
And now that I've already read this part and I'm rereading it, I'm just like, oh, like, that was a fun little conversation. Like, that was a fun little interaction. So
yeah, things that you don't pick up in there, even like little wording things that they say and back and forth, like stuff I never picked up the first time. And I've read this. Well, after reading
more
this, it's gonna. Yeah, I think this might be maybe my fourth time reading Dune, but I'm not really sure. I can't quite remember because I read this when I was real young, so I can't remember how many times I picked this book up. So, but yeah, I pick up something new every time I read this.
Yeah.
The only thing I kind of disliked about the book in the beginning is that you just get introduced to so many characters and you kind of want like the story to progress faster, but it's a very slow start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like obviously they're not even on Dune when they start. They're on Caladan and stuff like that. So
I don't know, but because you learn so much in this third and fourth chapter, that it already feels, you know, there are a lot of predictions in these chapters, so it already feels like you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So even though it is kind of like it feels really slow, you're now like, what? And so that was one of the things that I was like not remembering that it was in the beginning, like all these prophetic comments and the fact that Paul recognized them as prophetic and I don't know. It was interesting that I don't remember acknowledging that or understanding that when I first read it.
I agree. There's a lot of little nuances that maybe that's why this book is, you know, treated as such a great book for sci-fi readers, because there's nuances is that like there's seeds in here, even the first couple, you know, beginning, you know, chapters that seed the rest of the book and maybe even further. So, so this book's they're not really chapters. They're like sections within the first book.
Like they're not numbered.
Yeah, exactly. It's not chapter two,
right.
Chapter three.
Think of them as like scenes.
Yeah.
Although chapter four was almost like two scenes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
this is scene three, and we are on setting planet Caladan, and we have the Reverend Mother. And she's with Paul's mother, Jessica. And they're going back and forth and basically saying, the Reverend Mother is saying, why didn't you have a girl? You were supposed to have a girl. And Jessica's like, well, the Duke wanted me to have a son. And he says, you thought you could breed the Kwisatz-Haderach. And she's like, well, I thought it might be a case.
It's interesting to think that they can decide.
Yeah. Like,
you know?
They're just like, boy, girl.
Right. That's how it's going to be. No,
yeah.
No gender confusion in the world of Dune.
Yeah, and there was something else. There was actually, you were saying, yeah, no gender confusion. you could change it later on if you're not happy, I guess. I'll have to find the quote in here because I'm looking at the book right now. There's a quote about how there's a need for or a desire for wild mixing of you know, like the Gen X strains or the different. I'm looking for it right now.
Is it when she's talking about blending the Harkonnen and Atreides bloodline?
Well, that's what she wanted. She said if you had
something
a
about
girl,
wild.
Yeah, if you had a girl, if Jessica would have had a girl instead of Paul, they could have sealed the breach between the Harkonnens and the Atreides, and maybe there would be peace. So she's kind of blaming Jessica for that, which it's not really Jessica's fault, you know, that she decided to change that.
And you know what my thought was when I read that?
What's that?
Well, they don't know what gay marriage is. Did you imagine Paul?
Oh, I know. With Faye? That would be funny. Holy shit. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So the Reverend Mother basically goes into this whole thing saying, like, you know, because of that, you've kind of sealed your doom and the Duke's doom. And because his desire for the son, and now things are complicated, and she says we may lose both bloodlines now, so the Harkonnens and the Atreides. And Jessica kind of says, well, you're not infallible, you know, like you, there's some things that you might get wrong. And you know, the Reverend Mother's like, you know, well, okay, but you know, this is what we're seeing, what's going to happen. And and Jessica's like, I don't have any regrets. And she goes, well, tell me if you have any regrets when you're a fugitive with a price on your head and every man's hands turns against you to seek your life and the life of your son. Right. So it's like pretty bleak. And then you go into different things about, like, they start setting up how the Dune universe is kind of set up. She says that, I just found the quote actually about it. It says it's in the bloodstream to urge the urge to mingle genetic strains without plan. Mm-hmm. So that was a quote I was thinking about.
Okay.
So it's just funny. It's like it's the urge to mingle the genetic strains without a plan. Just be willy nilly about it. Like, we've got it all figured out. So they talk about the Imperium, which is, you know, obviously the ruling houses, and then the Chome Company, which they're sort of like, it's like an acronym, like Combine something Mercantiles or something like this. They run all the business end of things. And each houses have like percentage of Chome, and they make money off that.
I can tell you what Chome means.
Yeah, it has like a long name. I don't have it in front of me right now.
I have an index in the back of this here. Chome is an acronym for Combined Hane Ober Advance Mercantiles.
Right. So they're basically,
the Universal Development Corporation controlled by the Emperor and Great Houses with the Guild and Ben Gesserit as silent partners. Right. So it's like the three combined, but it's like the Chome have their own power. It's weird.
Yeah, they're sort of like the business class, and they kind of rule. And the Emperor and the Great Houses, like the Atreides, has a small percentage of Chome, but they're going to get a bigger percentage when they go to Planet Arrakis to rule that.
Yeah, isn't it like they kind of mention it in Chapter 1 about how the Ben Gesserit, I guess, church? I don't know. The Ben Gesserits are political, and the Chome is something else, and then there's the Emperor. And the Chome and the Ben Gesserits are like...
Yeah, it says here... I'm
not warring, but opposites.
Yeah. It says Arrakis is holding the plan for quasi-fiefdom under the Chome Company. This is talking about the Harkonnens. Contract to mine the geriatric spice melange. I'm sure it says more in here, but yeah. So
this book does say a lot.
This book says some things. Yeah, so the Chom is basically the incentive. They're going to get profits. They're going to make money off of going to Dune, obviously. Uh-huh. And but Dune is supposed to be a pretty bleak place. It's a very harsh place, not at all like the planet Kaladin that they've been on. So
right.
Then the Reverend Mother asked Paul to enter the room. He's like off in a side room, kind of meditating in a meditating room. Mm-hmm. So she brings Paul, and she wants to ask Paul about his dreams. So he has these dreams that are notable, that like he knows when dreams are going to come true. Like, so he has like prophetic dreams, or he sees the future.
He's the future.
Yeah, and but he knows when he's just having like a bullshit dream. Like, mm-hmm. he'll know that this is just a crazy dream. So he talks about he sees an underground place that's filled with people, and I think he says there's a girl there with them.
Well, in the cavern, they're alone, yes, waiting to go to the people.
Right. And she's scared or something like that. She says that she's frightened, and she says, tell me your home world, Usul. And he's like, it's weird because my home world is not Usul. And where is that?
Wasn't that then, like, I just love his personality. That's his innocence shining through, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. And then he goes, like, oh, it just occurred to me, maybe she's calling me Usul.
Right.
You know, so,
and he's what, and supposed, like, to be 13? He's young.
He's 15. I think he's 15. Supposed to be 15.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but yeah, he's very young. And, and then he says that he tells this girl that about the Reverend Mother coming to visit right, you know, like right now, presently, and that she put a stamp of strangeness on him.
Isn't that fun wording?
I know. It's like weird. It's like, I kind of like hope somebody puts a stamp of strangeness on me. I mean, that's weird.
I am one of the strangest people you probably know. I can help you with that.
I can help you. Strange. Yeah. So it's cool. So he's going through, and then he like, he's reciting a poem. One of a character we're going to meet later on is Gurney Halleck, wrote this poem about the water
about
and
the ocean and the, well, it's pretty much about a fire on the beach.
Right. But it's on planet Kaladin.
Right.
And so, you know, he goes through, you know, telling her about that. And like, I think Jessica, yeah, she recites the poem to him.
Yeah.
So, and then the Reverend Mother talks to him about the Kwisatz-Haderach and what it's about. And, this is like first time, he's kind of like more aware of that. So he doesn't know what it really is about. And so she starts telling him what the Kwisatz-Haderach is. And that basically, we described it last episode, but it's the male version of the Bene Gesserit that can see into past lineages, but see the male, yeah, side of things, well as the female.
And essentially their messiah.
You're right. Yeah. It's like the Christ-like character in there, yeah, in this book. From there he goes, they're talking about how, the Duke might not, the Duke's not going to live. And this obviously just terrifies Paul, and he pretty much upsets him. And it, Jessica, it's, she's upset with it, but she's also like kind of like resigned. This is going to be the future.
And I feel like she's more like on edge, like still thinking they can change that, yeah, even, yeah, though she can see that. I mean, granted, Reverend Mother can see more than Jessica can, but I just, right, think,
right,
yeah,
yeah. And then, so she, the Reverend Mother says that she has to leave, and then as she's leaving and she says goodbye, and she says, goodbye, young human, I hope you make it. But if you don't, we shall yet succeed. So
it says no matter.
Whatever. And then when she leaves, Jessica, she doesn't look back, but Jessica sees on the Reverend Mother's face that she has tears coming down her cheeks. So, mm-hmm, the one thing we didn't really mention is that Jessica and the Reverend Mother do have a strong connection. There is like a, she was like basically her understudy.
Her servant girl.
Yeah, servant girl. Like she, yeah, and she has a deep love for Jessica, and Les, and Jessica does too. But there's also like a strife, like kind of like an maybe like resentment in some ways as well. But there is a love there between them. And yeah. She loves her, but she can't change what she has to do. Like she says, duty comes first. You know, I think she even says, I love you like one of my daughters, but duty comes first and I have to take care of things. So,
yeah.
So she, like the Reverend Mother knows that Paul probably is not going to live. The Duke's going to die. And Jessica, who knows, like she's probably going to perish too. So she's upset with all this as well. So, and when Jessica sees that, sees the Reverend Mother crying, it kind of like, makes her upset as well, because she knows that it unnerves her, it says. So,
right, which I mean, I think that honestly, reading that again, it just feels like that was her coming to terms with the fact that he probably is the Messiah, and that didn't sit well with Jessica, because if he is, then everything that Reverend Mother has predicted is about to unfold.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And they're in for a hard time.
Right. Which we learn, like, I don't know. It's just funny that in reading it again, it's like, oh, wow, they knew everything that was going to happen.
Yeah,
like,
she spelled it pretty much out without like graphic detail. She tells them pretty sure what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. So, little hints.
So we go to the next scene and we get to meet Thufel Hout. And Thufel is a servant of the king. He's a Mentat assassin.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he is one of Paul's tutors as well. Like, he kind of teaches Paul how to all sorts of things. So,
yeah.
But you know, he's, I guess, a teacher, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes into, he's going through the castle, he's going to see Paul. And he's going through saying that he served three dukes. So, like, he's been in
around.
Service. Yeah, he's been in service.
To the Leto's.
To the Atreides.
Atreides.
And when he goes there, goes to see Paul, Paul has his back to the door, which disturbs him, because he always tells Paul not to have your back to the door, you know, because of security reasons. You see who's coming. And mm-hmm. Paul's, like, going over, like, books and maps of Arrakis. And he's like studying. So,
yeah.
And he goes, you know, like, you know, I've told you so many times. And he's like, first, he's just like, you know, clearing his throat, trying to get him to
get his attention.
He doesn't pay attention. He has to do it twice. And he goes, I know, I got my back to the door. I know you told me not to do it. And he goes, I heard you coming down the hall. And he goes, he says, yeah, but those sounds could be imitated. And he's like, yes, but
I would know.
Yeah, I would know the difference. So, so Paul is more astute than most, I would suppose. Mm-hmm. And then he has lots of questions about Arrakis and them going there. So apparently, a lot of people are packing up, and everyone's getting ready to go. And Thufel is going to be leaving soon, as well as a bunch of other people. I think there's the swordsman's Duncan Idaho. He left already to go ahead of them to get things set up. And he's kind of going through like what life is like on Arrakis, that it's harsh, you know, like there's sandstorms that could just, you know, take
obliterate everything.
Yeah. Just take the skin right off your bones. Kind of thing. So. Yeah, so it's pretty intense. And then as they're talking about Arrakis, he starts thinking back to I guess this is going like a week in forward, because he's thinking a week back to when the Reverend Mother came and visited. Mm-hmm. And he's thinking about what she said about his father, the Duke.
Right.
And that basically there's no hope for him, that he's not going to make it.
Right.
And this is kind of like Paul's nervous about that. And, you know, Thufel's kind of just like, yeah, you should be nervous. This could be really like, everyone's warned the Duke. This might not be a great idea to go.
Right.
For your safety. So, but obviously the riches of Arrakis, you know, it's going to bring them there anyways. And, so from there, they talk some more and basically you get the idea that, Thufel's still trying to guide him and trying to teach him. We get that he's a trusted, teacher of Paul. And as he gets ready to leave, he's getting everything set up. Paul says, and I will change sides and I will face the doorway. So
he's like, hey, he's like, yeah, don't sit with your back to the door. And he's like, yeah,
you can bet I won't. Yeah, I know. Right.
Which is so, like where all the comedy comes in is this weird little exchange between them. And then you get Duncan Idaho
Gurney Halleck. Gurney Halleck is great to read because they just bust balls constantly.
They do. And it's fun because you're like, wow, you're like this little 15-year-old prince. Well, Duke son. Yeah, he's right. What's the son of a Duke?
I think it's still a Duke.
Is it still a Duke?
I imagine. Maybe not officially a Duke, but you will be Duke.
Right. Well, first in line.
Yes, first in line to be Duke. Yeah, Gurney Halleck walks in with all these weapons, and then he has this instrument.
This basilet.
Yeah, and
Balisset. I always say that wrong.
Yeah, and Balisset. Balisset, and he sets out all the weapons, and then he starts tuning his instrument, and then he starts singing this song about, it's basically just kind of like a dirty song about, you know, Galatian girls will do it for pearls, Arrakens will for water. But if you desire dames like consuming flames, try a Kaladin, daughter. And he says, my mom caught you singing that song. She'd put your ears on the castle wall. And he goes, that would be awful.
Decorating.
It would be terrible.
Poor decoration too. They having been bruised so much listening at keyholes. Like, yeah. Young lad.
And it's funny because Gurney is described as being kind of like gross looking, like ugly. Ugly guy. He's got a big scar across his face. Apparently he got it in the fighting pits of Giedi Prime for the Harkonnens. He was in like one of their the Colosseums or something like that. They would fight, and so he has an intense hatred for the Harkonnens, and we learn a little bit more in the second about his experience with them. But he's going to they're going to do their training, and they're going to fight with rapiers, and they have these shields that are turn on that apparently the shielding keeps away fast attacks, but slow attacks it can pierce the shields.
Mm-hmm.
So while
it's like a magnetic barrier.
Yeah, it's basically your personal shield. It's just you can protect you. And
it's not like a put on your arm, it's a shield, it's like around your body. It's a belt. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And while they're fighting, Paul makes some, what do you say? He's like,
he's not in the mood.
He's not in the mood. He goes, moods, and Halleck says, what's mood had to do with it? You fight when the necessity arises, no matter the mood. Mood's a thing for cattle or making love or playing the basslet, not for fighting. And, you know, and
you're not sorry enough.
He says, yeah, Paul goes, I'm sorry. And Gurney goes, you're not sorry enough. So they start their fight, and Gurney's really intense, more intense than normal with their training. And during this point where, you know, Paul gets his weapon through Gurney's shield to win the fight, but Gurney has it right at his crotch. Mm-hmm. So he was like, would you really have cut me in her, you know? And he's like, if you fought
a step below how I've trained you,
yeah,
you may have gotten scarred.
Right, exactly. give you a scar to remember.
Right.
And then from there, they go into, he's going to, like, it's a fighting dummy. Like, it's like a robot that he fights with a rapier. And Gurney's controlling it. And Gurney has this thought about his sister, how she was, like, killed by the Harkonnens in this pleasure house for the troops. And he remembers that she loved pansies. And he goes, or was it daisies? And he's so upset by this.
That he doesn't remember which one. Yeah.
And what did he say? It was funny because he was talking about how he's thinking about how they're training Paul at the moment. And he says something like, I'm a tree that's been grafted on all these things to that it could be a service. I'm trying to find the section where it's really.
When was it? Because I have. I'm the well-trained fruit tree. He thought. Yes. Full of well-trained feelings and abilities, and all of them grafted onto me, all bearing for someone else to pick.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that is unbelievable. And he's going on his thoughts like, Paul has been shielded, now he's going to be forced out in this world, and he's going to be exposed to all this stuff. So, I don't know, I don't think I've been touched that much by Gurney before. And reading that, I was like, maybe because I'm older now and I'm reading it, I'm like, I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that. It's very touching and it's painful, but it's also true. You know, like you graft things onto you because this is what life requires of you. So, and then he acts, he throws out this thought that his mother used to say, if wishes were fishes, we'd all cast nets.
Yeah, which I've heard before, but maybe because my parents saw this when it came out and read it, and so maybe they just said it when I was growing up, but I've heard that before.
Yeah, no, I wonder if it's an old saying. I don't know. I have heard that once or twice before, not as often, though, but and he thought it was funny, that expression, in a planet that's never known sea or fishes.
Right.
We're on planet Arrakis.
Right.
So, interesting two chapters, I think. And
yeah.
I really enjoyed, I think I enjoyed Gurney way more than I thought I would. Cause I always kind of dismiss Gurney in a little bit, but he's an interesting character. Thufel is a nice character, but he's not, maybe not as interesting to me. And he gets, as time goes, he's a mentat. So he's sort of like Spock kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
Not as devoid of emotion, but he's very like focused on
very what analytical and
and then the whole Reverend Mother exchange is interesting too because it's prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it, and I hope you are too, and I want to know, I hope David is reading these two chapters.
He better.
I want to know how. I know, right? He's just gonna skip to the next two, catch the next show, and be like,
"Wait, who are these people?"
Yeah. but I'm curious. So, as far as pronunciation, because that's a big question in all of these books, pronunciation, and where do you get Thufel? Because I read it Thufir.
You know, I've heard it pronounced Thufel before.
Mm.
So it's Thu and Phil. Yeah, you could be Thufir.
I don't know. I guess I just read it Thufir.
Thufir, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, there's a ton of stuff in these books. Like, when we were talking about doing, like, a read-through of this, I was like, man, we're going to have to do, like, our first episode, or maybe, like, the sixth is going to have to be, like, us going through the glossary.
No, right.
Because, there's shit. There's actually
an encyclopedia of all the, for everything.
It's in the back of mine.
But no, there's, like, a printed encyclopedia for, like...
Oh, really?
For all the books.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's, like, I guess, yeah, it gets even more intense after this.
Gotcha.
cool. So I'm glad this is our second parter, and I can't wait to get more into it. And I like just the breakdown of us talking about it, because I think we both get more, or even Dave gets more out of it after talking about it for a little bit. So
yeah,
we pick up on things that maybe the other person didn't get, or we didn't like hear the same way. Like I said, the Hollick, Gurney Hollick one is like hit me totally different reading this time. So,
Yeah, the first time I read it, or at least the last time I read it, which was probably the first time I read it. You know, it wasn't as friendly banter. It was more as mentor.
Yeah.
Than friend. And right. So even though Paul was like, out of all of my father's men, I like Gurney the most.
Yeah.
It just, this time I read it and I was like, I feel that. I feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. I like it. Yeah. It's very interesting.
And for those people who haven't read it, it's cool that we're walking through it anyway, because now, I mean, they don't have to, and they can still experience the book in a way that you can't really translate on film anyway, because you lose stuff.
There's stuff that you just cannot put on there, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
And film won't translate to. Yeah, absolutely.
And I do love that, like, each scene is got the precursor from, like, the Princess of Mulan, writes books about Muad'Dib.
Right.
So it's like every quote is from her, and it's all, like David was saying last week, like it's all pertinent to the chapters or scenes.
Right.
But like you don't know how until you've read that chapter or scene. So I just think it's cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of giving stuff away, but you're wondering like, well, how's this all going to play out?
Well, so. The precursor to the fourth here wasn't very, it didn't spoil anything for me.
Yeah.
It was literally just like, I know you've heard about Muad'Dib and you've read about him. And then it was like, you're also going to learn about Gurney and Duncan and, Yue and Jessica and Duke Leto. So like, it wasn't really, like, it was important, but it didn't really tie in too much to where it gave anything away.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So.
Very cool. Well, guys, we hope you're enjoying all this, and we can't wait to get into the next couple chapters. If you want to contact us, you can either go email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com, or you can hit us up at our Facebook page, facebook.com/groups/synthaholics. Get it up there, or our Twitter is @SynthaholicsDuo. And if this show is something you want to support, please go to our Patreon.com/SynthaholicsDuo, and you can throw us some money that way. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right. Well, as they say in Dune World, the spice must flow. So until next week, guys.
Take care. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I've ever had.